Session number 16718, Major Wilfred White, Reel 9.
Mr. White, Reel 9. You were in a position on the reverse slope of a rise. What was the terrain like from then on to the enemy lines?
Well, it was very much like the terrain we were on the reverse slope. The forward slope was much the same as a natural continuation. The crest was an OP line, which I suppose I didn't go up daily to them. There's no necessity for me to go up daily, but we had a observation post there, and we also had on the downward slope at the front end of the box where we were in the wire, we had a standing patrol. They were well dug in, telephone communication with us, and they were the sort of the forward sentries, if you like, because they all the time they could see the ground, which rose away from that point to a, in our case, a hill, a small hill, and that hill, it must have had a name, I never knew it, for the weeks that we'd been there and that the enemy had been there on the hill, they were actually on it, their nearest point. They'd sowed mines, they'd wired it up to stop us rushing them. And we had put a lot of mines and wire on our side of the hill to stop them rushing down and charging into us. It was a very strong point. And it was the sort of key point of the key point of the attitude of the battalion. We knew that that pinpoint, that hill, would be in a point that we had to attack sometime or the other, sooner or later. So that we kept, after day and night, daily shelling and at night patrolling, both fighting patrols, which caused a lot of casualties because it was so awkward to get at and strong.
That's casualties to yourselves?
Casualties to ourselves, yes. And we lost a lot of officers especially through that sort of thing. And reconnaissance patrols. But that really dominated the ground from a structural point of view, from the hills, from a terrain point of view. But tactically, it dominated our thinking. Our efforts was keep the blighters as weak as you could.
Were the slopes and hills, as you mentioned, were they quite marked?
Well, from our OP line, there was a definite slope down, which built up quite definitely to this pinpoint structure I was telling you about. And of course, beyond that was the, I don't know what the name of the hills were now anyway, but there were some really high, prominent hills, but they were so far back that I don't think that they had good observation on our position.
And you had three types of patrols: the standing patrol, which was at your wire,
yes,
at your own wire,
yes,
and mines.
Yes.
Recce patrol.
Yes.
Their task obviously was to reconnoitre.
Yes. Well, there was always you were usually set definite questions to answer on these recce patrols. Like, are they still at point so-and-so? What are they doing at point so-and-so? how many are there, you know, and what are they doing? What sort of mines did you find it? Where does the mining line start? You know, it was here. Is it coming forward? Those sort of things. You weren't sent off just to wander around, you know. You answer some questions. That was the recce patrol. The fighting patrol was bigger, as the name said, and strongly armed, with just bust through and grab a prisoner hole was the really the popular one.
Listening patrol, did you have that as well?
Pardon me?
A listening patrol where you went out and just listened.
Oh well, that could be part of that. That could be part of the recce patrol. So certainly, listening is.
Did you feel yourself that this active patrolling was a plus? It was an important part of.
Oh yes, oh yes. I only did one patrol in the Alamein line, and I felt I was a soldier after I'd, you know. Oh God!
Can you take me through that from the very beginning when you, as you say, you were obviously with your commanding officer, you were talked through what you were going to do.
Yes, well, it's sort of the company commander come and see me. Straight away, it was usually a runner who would come down, come to go along who wants you. And I'm hesitating because I can't remember whether this was on the day it happened or a day before. You know, it could have well been, tomorrow night you're on patrols, Scotty, as they call me. I tell you what you've got to do. And either, again, you might get your briefing in a battalion sort of setting, or the company commander would do it. The patrol I went on, the company commander sort of handled it all. In other words, I was briefed and set my task by Teddy. Now, whether somebody told him what task I had to pass down to me, one doesn't know. But he says, now, rough sketch map. He says, now here we are, here's them. Now watch where I draw the wire lines as well. They're the main wire lines, you know. Now what we want you to do is I want you to go out via the standing patrol and patrol round the wire, our wire up to that point, then follow the wire in to that burned out vehicle. And remember, when you're round about the burned out vehicle, you're touching his wire, and there's maybe this the mine and that mine and that mine. But as your route, you follow it along there, then you come back. And altogether, it's going to take you such and such a time when everybody along your line, our line, all your friends will know that you're out there. And there'll be nobody else out there unless it's the enemy. Now get that one clear, because you do not have much time to take any action if you see somebody. So think about it. And we'll go and look at the ground now. So it's still daylight. And you go up the reverse slope. And when you get near the top to the OP, you've got to be very careful from now on. See? Then you look and you see the enemy wire and the burned out vehicle he mentioned and this. And so it goes on. And you know, take as long as you like until you've got fixed in your mind how are you going to approach it. And I think Teddy suggested how many men I should take, but he leaves it up to you, you see. And I think I took three. And then you come back, and the big thing in my life got issued with a pair of desert boots, patrol boots. Now, when you saw those in Cairo or Croppies, that's the bee's knees. You've been on patrol, you know, against the real enemy. That's what I thought.
What way did they differ from your usual boots?
Well, the usual boots were leather, weren't they? These were the brothel creeper type of thing, which were a bit higher than shoes, you know, to support your ankles, but of a sort of a suede upper, and then the thick composition rubber bottom. I don't know whether it was just a fad because we were in the desert, but if you got a pair of patrol boots and a pair of corduroys, you're ready to have your picture taken with Montgomery. You know what I mean? It's an absolute nonsense, but still, little things kept your morale going. And
what did you take with you in the way of weapons and equipment?
The only ones I can remember was I had a. I probably took my binoculars, although it was at night. A compass, my revolver, and a Thompson submachine gun, a Tommy gun, with probably a spare clip. That was me in back my face, soft hat.
Was the compass luminous? You could see
yes.
In the dark?
Oh, yes. And
and the men were blacked as well, with their faces blacked.
That's right, yes. I'm not sure, you know, about whether I blacked my face or not, to be perfectly frankly, because no, but that's how I would be armed. Water bottle, of course, always with you. And I think two or three 36 grenades. I also had a special pouch, which I carried them in at my side. And I usually put bars of chocolate in there if I had any spare as well. And the men armed very much the same. I probably have, amongst the three of them, two with Tommy guns as well. They wouldn't have grenades. Or they didn't have grenades on the patrol.
Was a Tommy gun a better patrolling weapon than a rifle?
Yes, I thought so. The obvious reason why is you got much more control over firing, you know, in multiple directions. You know, you can change from one direction to another very quickly, quicker than you can with a rifle. And of course, a rifle only fires single shots, at least our rifles did, the Lee Enfield. You've got all the clout of, reloading. Whereas, you're on single fire, it's pop, 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 or you just press a switch and your fire bursts. So it is the ideal weapon for close contact and surprise.
In choosing your men at this point, although you had only been with them, as you say, a very short time, did you have a good idea of those in your platoon who you thought would be good patrollers?
Yes, I see the point that you're making. I hadn't been there long enough to make a true man-for-man comparison, but I was very happy with the men I took. Probably that's because the sergeant told me they're, you know, they're the boys to have with you. Don't take him because he'll, you know, he'll be at them straight away. You'll have difficulty in controlling him. Because that was the other thing I had to test myself on, you know, was how do you control men at night? I mean, in the sense of getting them to react to what you want them to do, you know, you can say we're going to crawl up to that point and you watch that way and you watch that way and you watch behind. But if something happens, what do? Yeah. So the day of the patrol arrives and you've been excused duties for most of the day. You're sleeping in your hole. And you're looked after like fighting cocks, you know. And Teddy always used to wrestle something special up for us, you know, bacon sandwich. Not with bread, but bacon and some pens. Might be an egg, you know. And he sits in while you give you orders. But he doesn't interrupt. You know, if he wants to say something, he'd say, "No, Scotty, why are you going? Why are you telling them that? Because this is in front of your men." And he said, "That's a very good reason." You say, "Oh, or nothing." And I seem to remember he walked down to part of the way down to the standing patrol. Best of luck. Any queries? And off you go, and you're naturally keyed up. The adrenaline's pumping away. And
is there a fear element?
Fear
in there?
Oh yes, but there's nothing. It's nothing like the fear that comes on you after you've once been hit. That's, you know, totally personal. I mean, up till the time that you get hit, you're of the mentality, well, the other poor son will get hit. You know, you can't imagine that out of the whole army that you're going to be selected to be hit by a shell, can you? But it happens. See, it happened to me.
How do you move forward, or how did you move forward?
Well, in this case, when you start off, we made a small triangle, or diamond. Me at point, chap at right behind me, watching my back and watching, not going to get surprised from the back. And then two flank men outwards with their automatics.
What distance would this be between each man?
No more than touch distance. That's what I did, rightly or wrongly.
But as you say, control would have been very difficult if they'd been too far.
If you'd got them any further, you see. That was what had struck me. And I stopped every 100 paces, because we worked on paces, and the man at the back was also counting paces for me. You know, it's 500 paces that way, about. We'll make it 500. And then, so that we all had a bit of a clue how far, where we were. As you got near to their wire, every 100 yards, what I was going to say is we used to stop and have 2 or 3 minutes breather and listen. And you could hear all sorts of funny things that way, you know. But you had to keep listening because you couldn't see very far. And when I got to the enemy wire, man, thrilled. I said, no, don't touch the wire. This is it. Went along, and we found some enemy magazines. He'd empty, useless, but they were from his light machine gun. So I took those back, trophies. And we listened at the wire, but they weren't apparently working. And so it went on, the first patrol, no incident. And the boss was waiting for us, when the company commander was waiting for us, and says, you know, as soon as the men had got them back to their holes and that, and, got their food, he says, oh, that's when he took me up to battalion headquarters. And I can't remember whether I had my bacon and egg before I went up. I probably had. Well, I gabbled excitedly. And really, it was a no job, you know. I think they were just giving the regular boys who knew what they were doing a night off, and just giving me a taste of the, you know, the actual drill of it all, because I had two or 300 yards away from, not like the poor sods who had to go and jump in a trench and pull out a prisoner, you see.
So you had no specific objective?
Oh, yes. The questions, I was given questions, the point I was making before, questions to answer. But I can't know what they are now. But they were of the order I'd mentioned before, you know, is have they put any mines round that rusty old truck out there, you know, because it's a...
Did you get to a situation where you could hear the enemy?
Not on that patrol, but coming back, I heard the Greeks, and they were just beside us, and I had been told to watch what you do, because if they see you coming out of the dark, they'll finish you off, you know, no hesitation. So that really brought us down to there. But no, I didn't hear any digging. Yes, you can always hear a bit of firing in the distance, but you know, it wasn't of any relevance to us. And well, God only knows what the thought of the patrol. But I was left. I'd done my first bit of soldiering, you know, I'd been on my own and ready, tensed up to face all comers. And I dare say at that point I was ready for the next patrol, but before then the battle had started, and we got our orders, the warning order of it, which
you mentioned the Czech brigade, Greek brigade,
yes.
that was the joining you. What were they like?
Well, I never saw them. I never met them. But I heard them. They were deadly killers. And they didn't worry too much about who they were killing, I think. You know, they fired their guns. The gung-ho, as we say. They fired their guns as soon as they heard a noise. And we were warned to keep away from them, unless it was a formal meeting in daylight. But to be blunt, to blunder into them at night with your patrol or whatever, it was almost suicide. So we had great respect for them in that way, and they certainly didn't do anything that I know of that let us down, and were very supportive and, you know, grand allies, as they all were.
They had a bit of a revenge element, hadn't they?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, they hadn't come from a sort of a Pacific sort of situation like we had at home. But there was a bit of a war amongst themselves too, wasn't there? You know.
When you came back from the patrol, you've mentioned you were debriefed, more or less. You had to talk through your thing. Then we were allowed a full day off the next day?
Well, I can't remember any special duties to do the next day, but, you know, you always got the... You had the chance to recuperate, whether it was a 2 or 3 hour skip or just snatched a couple of hours skip. Well, you know, where the platoon sergeant was running the show, you were really coddled. You know, you'd been under special stress on your own, and obviously they wanted you ready to do it again when it was. So they're very good to you, yes. And that's one of the things I liked about Teddy. He made it a special point that you should, you know, insofar as he could. He wanted to show you that he appreciated what you'd been doing and what you'd been through.
You're getting close to Alamein itself.
Yes.
Did you, at your level, know prior to it starting that it was going to start?
Yes. It was a great thing about the General Montgomery. Incidentally, I'm a Monty man, you know, most people. He's such a character and a forceful character. He made as many enemies amongst our side as amongst the Germans and the Italians, I think. No, that's not true, really. But he was easy to criticize, you know, there's always. But one of his real qualities was the way he transmitted his intention to the army itself, blokes like me, with down to the small units, and how he transmitted the detail which proved what he was saying was going to happen, would happen, and, you know, unless you're damned unlucky, you know, you're going to live through that and see the benefits of what we're about to do. We've got so much armor now we didn't have. We've got so many fighting divisions that we didn't have before. We've got the guns, the ammunition, and, you know, I'm going to strike when I'm absolutely sure we're at the peak condition. And, you know, you could see things happening. And I like to think that it did sort of lift the morale we had. We knew these things were about. And after all, the Battle of Alam Halfa, which he'd fought a month or so before, he had done the same thing, his first battle. He told everybody how he was going to fight it. And he did. He predicted what Rommel would do. And Rommel did, and he had an overall victory of some standing. So, yes, he did. He told us precisely, and sent an order of the day down more than once.
Did this morale and confidence in Montgomery come right down to the private himself?
Well, I think it did. I think it did. I mean, some, obviously, I suppose it happened at all ranks, at all levels. They couldn't care less what they heard. They just wanted to go home, you know. But allowing for that sort of element, everybody was, you know, raring to go.